Welcome to People More Interesting Than Me, the podcast, where I step back and let fascinating individuals take the spotlight. Join me as I sit down with incredible guests who captivate and inspire, showcasing their stories, experiences, and wisdom that make them truly extraordinary. Tune in for engaging conversations that'll leave you enlightened and entertained. I mean, at least I'm entertained. I'm thrilled to introduce our guest today, Michelle Bassett. Michelle's journey is a remarkable testament to resilience and the transformative power of self-learning. Born into poverty and raised in the projects of Queens, she faced challenges from an early age. A subpar education system, a less than ideal family dynamic, and the additional hurdle of dyslexia. Against all odds, Michelle not only became the first in her family to graduate college, but went on to earn a master's degree. Michelle quickly discovered that her unique marketing expertise set her apart in her field. She helped many brands thrive even before terms like conversion rate optimization or SEO became mainstream. In this episode, Michelle and I, we talk about how there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that people don't know to even talk about. And we talk about conspiracies with Taylor Swift and jet travel. Stay tuned and enjoy. If you can cue everyone in on what you do for a living.
Okay. Well, see, what had happened was, right? I am currently a data governance engineer. So that's in the realm of data science. But for most of my career, I've operated in a marketing manager type capacity. And then I kind of inched my way towards this data science-y thing. And the way that I explain it to people and randomly in Walmart when I want to tell them what I do, because I'm lonely. I say I make charts look pretty, right? So that's pretty much what I do. If you are running any sort of Facebook campaign or Google campaign or whatever, it's a whole bunch of data that comes in on the back end. It's like a wall of numbers and like these Excel spreadsheets. And sadly, most of the people who sign my paychecks can't read those numbers and make sense of them. So what I do is I make them into like this little pretty charts, and I make little pictures, and I tell them stories with those numbers so that they can better run the marketing campaigns or better run the department or whatever. So that's pretty much what I do.
Okay, that makes sense. And I guess what you're, do you ever, I guess, put input into, I guess, the way to steer the digital marketing?
Yeah. So when I'm consulting, and I'm wearing multiple different hats sometimes. Sometimes it's as simple as we just need these numbers to be visualized or put in, you know, Tableau, which is a visualization software, or we need this, excuse me, we need this in a PowerPoint or whatever. So I'm putting in less opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm very opinionated. Some people call that a control freak. I don't know. I don't listen to those people. But I always give a little, if you do this, you can possibly have this result next time. Or this wasn't a success in my opinion because of this, that, and the third. Maybe we can try to pivot this way. So I always do that. But if I'm consulting with like a smaller company, so I'm not in like a Red Hat or Coca-Cola, Home Depot, whatever, I'm talking to, you know, the dude around the corner who decided he was going to do the drop shipping course. So it's like, then I'm saying, okay, Todd, we need to do this type of campaign, or we need to move money over here so that you get a better audience. And then I'll set up the different type of tests to prove that I'm right. Because that's another thing about me. I really like being right. So I build tests to prove that I'm right. Sometimes I'm wrong, but we don't talk about those times. But we do stop spending money when I am wrong. You know, it's all about, you know, proving it, you know. Mm-hmm. Anything I say in my PowerPoint, and a lot of people get kind of get a kick out of this, right? I start the whole thing with, in this presentation, at any point in time, you can stop and say, prove it. Depending on the size and the age of your audience, you might want to take that out. But most of the PowerPoints that I was explaining before, people have like this thing in their head when they think about corporate PowerPoint presentations that they have to be 300 slides long. And it's like mine are mostly 3 to 5 slides. If you get these 3 to 5 slides, it's pretty much it. But if someone in that presentation, CMO, CFO, marketing manager, tech manager, whatever, yells, prove it, because it has become a game at this point, then I go to slide 74 and like, here's where the proof is.
Yeah. No, it makes
sense. But yeah.
Have you ever experimented with kind of unconventional or out of the box digital marketing that turned out like surprisingly successful?
Yes. So I got into internet marketing by accident, like in 2010-ish. I was finishing up my behavior analysis degree at Savannah State. So that was my bachelor's degree. It has been a windy road to get to where I'm at. But I was finishing up my bachelor's degree. And I realized that when I graduated, I had to pay back these student loans. And I didn't have a job, any job prospects, nothing. So I was like, okay, I need to make money. And when you're in college, that's your job. You really can't work anywhere to make real money. So I saw one of those ads. This was back before there was like rules around pop-ups and all this other stuff. It was before there were rules around pop-ups and everything else. And so there used to be these pop-ups. You can see them now on like these sites, places of the internet where you shouldn't be anyway right now. Where it's like a pop-up. You won $10,000, fill out the survey, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So it was one of those. And it was like, learn how to make money online. In 3 clicks, you'll make $1,000. All you have to do is pay $47.99. Well, $47.99 and 3 clicks later, I was just out of $47.99. But I knew. So a seed was planted that there was a way to possibly make money online. And then it was a site called Elance. That's how old I am. It was a site called Elance. It's now called Upwork because they were bought by Upwork. But the Google Panda update had just came out and it trashed all these companies because they were like essentially like spamming like these own, they were called microsites. So they were like spamming their own little sites to like get high rankings on Google. And so the Panda SEO update came out. And all these companies, all these millionaire next door type people were losing their mind. So they had to do real SEO. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was like, oh, I can do SEO. That sounds simple. I
didn't know. What's SEO? I'm sorry.
Oh, search engine optimization. Gotcha. So like that's how you get to the highest points on Google. So I learned really, really quickly how to rank websites. Looking back on it, now that I have a master's degree in internet marketing, I told you guys it was windy. I have a master's degree in internet marketing. That was very unconventional, some of the things that I was doing. And some people would call it black hat. We don't listen to those people because they're haters. But it was a lot of sketchy stuff I was doing to get those pages ranked once the Panda update came out. But it was the wild, wild west back then, and everybody was just trying to do stuff. And then I also got involved with people who were like in MLMs, the multi-level marketing company. Most people know them like as like Amway or Avon or something like that. For those in your audience who knows that type of industry, it was a few of those famous people who we kind of linked up early on. And I gave them a lot of the sauce that kind of made them who they are now. And I am forever apologetic for that. And please don't write me bad things when you get my LinkedIn information. But it was fun times. It was fun times.
So with, like, for example, all this stuff's coming out with automation mm-hmm. to help support digital marketing. How do you balance like the use of automation and still kind of maintaining like a personal touch in your campaigns. And then I do have a, I'm going to remember this. I have a very random but SEO question after.
Okay. So there's a difference between automation and like AI. So right now everyone's kind of lumping them together. So automation has been going on since forever, and that's very specific timing language there. But like Zapier has been around for forever. Now it's make.com for the other tools. But anytime you have an automated thing that you do every single day, whether it's marketing or whether it's in my house, we have the little home assistants. I don't want to say the name because then my whole house will light up. But every single morning, lights come on, my son's speaker wakes him up, playing Kids Bop, and he has his routine. He checks it off. By the time he comes downstairs, it's time. The lights in the hallway goes on. He comes downstairs, and then I wake up. Right. So that's automation. But when it comes to marketing, especially for the paid campaigns, like you go on Google, that's called pay-per-click, right? So when you see those headlines and the phone number and this and that, like there's a lot of automation that goes into that, right? So automation has always played a part in marketing. Automation has always played a part in marketing. Especially when it comes to the ads, the funnel itself. So you're on one page, you click to see the next page, you click to see the next page, and then you buy. So automation has always had a part. When it comes to the human touch, I think we might be leaning more into like the AI sort of space. And I love AI. I have always loved AI. And since my AI is listening to me, I love you so much, but there will come a time very soon where misinformation is getting spread more frequently and faster, and we won't be able to tell what a human validated truth is and what AI copied from itself.
Yeah.
And that will open up an opportunity in the marketing space to have more human touch points in the funnels, for example, right? So I said, you're on one page, you go to another page, you go to another page, you go to another page. That's all handled by Pabbly and Zapier, make.com, ClickFunnels, right? Like that's all handled systematically. I think there will come a point, and I've kind of seen it already, where I think there will come a point, and I've seen it already, where there will be hop on this call with so-and-so and such for this $5,000 product. It won't be, oh, you're going to go to this webinar that's already been up, or you're just going to blindly buy this thing, or you're going to just come to this email. And I think that the leaders in the information space will have to show up more. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but.
Yeah, because I've thought about this before with all this influx of people in all these sectors switching to AI. It seems like there's going to be an influx of need for a human touch in a lot of those sectors, because people are going to, you know, like when you have that much, a lot of stuff requires human touch, especially in some of the fields like medical, things that require a little bit more non, you know, like sensitive areas.
Yeah.
What I wanted to say on SEO, and the funny thing is when you said SEO, it sounded familiar because I had seen a video, and this is a huge conspiracy SEO story, but I thought it was just fascinating because, you know, like, whenever you hear a conspiracy theory, you're like, it might be true, but there's no way to really know.
I'm all about conspiracy theory, so I'm for the next part of the sentence.
Okay. So what I heard, this, I don't know the dates on this. I think this happened maybe middle of, oh no, it had to happen during, let's say it happened like October, September. So this is when, I don't know, when Taylor Swift's tour was going, and like she was, supposedly they have a lot of celebrities at her concerts and stuff like that. So she was flying people in on a jet. And they were saying that her environmental impact was huge because this jet was going like consistently all over. And when you searched SEO wise, Taylor Swift jet, like you would come up with these articles on her environmental impact. However, near this time, there was a Jets game with the Kansas City, Kansas City Chiefs. And as you know, at that game, this is what I was told. They met, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift met. So if you look now at Jets and Taylor Swift, comes up a football game. Yes. So the theory was that they got into a relationship. So that, or that spin, that impact of her jet and the articles and the environmental impact from the, I guess, the CO2 that her jet was emitting. They were trying to sway it with this relationship and this Jets game by changing the Jets team, I guess, not team tag, but team association with the actual environmental personal jet. And I just found that funny.
I cannot confirm or deny because I can't confirm or deny. But I will say that's a really good conspiracy theory. And two, that happens a lot. That happens a lot with way more important things than Taylor Swift.
Like elections.
I'm not confirming or denying anything, but that happens a lot. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
So speaking on that, how do you ensure digital marketing campaigns are culturally sensitive and relevant, especially when targeting diverse audiences across like different regions or demographics?
Okay. So for those of you who aren't watching this, I am an African-American woman, right? And there'll be people who will argue with me about that point, right? So I got out of fully running digital marketing campaigns and not for like a bigger scope or agency or whatever. I got out of that around 2017, 18. So before 2020 happened. So it was never a thought of mine to do that. It's something that just happens innately. Because the goal is to never offend anyone, right? But when you're working with certain companies, because again, I've been all over the internet, and that includes some different types of companies, right? When it comes to certain areas of internet, and I don't do anything political, but shock value and getting people to disagree with you brings more eyes, more impressions, more page views, more clicks, more higher engagement goals, more sales, right? So that's like the cycle there. I've personally never done it to like have shock value. I have recently been a part of a campaign for a smaller company. And people were upset because the characters weren't white, essentially. So it was a Facebook campaign. It was in September. And so the people were upset that the characters weren't white. These are characters that this person, a white man, created himself. I don't know why, but it's like,
Is he older than the age of 50 or 60?
I think he's like 40. I don't know. Okay. But it's like he writes kids books, essentially. The audience was upset that there were no white main characters. It was only like white side characters and they weren't main characters. And the Facebook ad has comments on it. And 90% of the comments are from people who are upset that there's no diversity in this cast of characters, where there was a lot of diversity in the cast of characters, but that made the engagement go up for the post, which made our ad spend go down. So ethically, I could have said, okay, These people are not engaging because the content is relevant, because the ad speaks to them, because of whatever else. And I should pull it. What the man paid me to do was get him the best cost per click. So that was the dilemma I faced around September. And I feel like it kind of bit me later on, because I wound up getting whatever cough that was going around, and then I wound up getting pneumonia, and then I got the flu. So I probably should have pulled it like I wanted, like I should have done. But no, I kept it up. And now in a climate, and you guys can actually write me angry posts about this, but now in a climate when everyone is offended about everything, it's hard to be all inclusive. Because me calling myself an African-American woman will offend someone. So it's very hard to navigate digital marketing when you'll offend anybody by doing anything.
Yeah, that's what it seems. It's like, just like you said, it's like as not being inclusive enough, you're being exclusive.
Yes.
Which is, yeah. And I totally understand it, because it's kind of like a.
So if you want a conspiracy theory, I'm going to get a lot of angry messages about this one. A lot of the selective outrage that's going on right now, which is what I call it, and I stole that from Chris Rock, but I'm not giving him any credit. A lot of the selective outrage that's going on right now may have been by design. It's very easy to design selective outrage when you give people so many ways to divide themselves up that they never focus on the real issues and think about people as a whole, especially corporations. Corporations are really all about diversity, equity, and inclusion. But when you look at their hiring policies, their teams, their numbers, their pay rates, everything else, they're not. But if you say something to someone that they slightly don't like, now this team is all about diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's not. So selective outrage. Same thing when it comes to political ideations, wars, economy, everything else. Because if we divide ourselves in a small enough bucket, no one will ever point to the real issue, which is this don't work no more. Just don't, but I'm gonna get a lot of angry letters, but it's fine.
It's okay. we kind of touched on this, but how do you craft, like, I would imagine it's very difficult to craft marketing strategies, mm-hmm. like new experimental immersive on the digital realm. How do you kind of do that, how is that done creatively?
So There's two ways to go about it. I mentioned that I had a behavior analysis degree. And then I also mentioned that I'm a data scientist. So somewhere along those realms, this became that, right? So to make a marketing campaign, very, very boring answer I'm about to give you, but it's true. Everybody starts off the same, right? So everybody starts off the same. You tell me some basic information, whether it's national, international, regional, you're a mom and pop shop, you're a plumber, you are a bakery owner, whatever, right? And then once I get the framework together, so if we're doing a video campaign, that's a certain framework. We're doing a Facebook campaign, that's a certain Facebook. A native ad is like when you're scrolling, when you're like doom scrolling, you see like an ad and it's like, oh, Taylor Swift, carbon dioxide, something, I don't know. That's what was at the top of my head. And so, like, picking those things out then lays its own framework out. So if I'm cooking dinner, 9 times out of 10, my protein is going to be chicken, because I really don't eat pork, really don't eat beef. Probably going to eat chicken. Everyone's had a chicken. It's fine. We have accepted it. You need a vegetable, and you need a starch, and maybe some bread, whatever. I don't know, right? So you kind of limit your options when you know that this is going to be what it is. Now, once it's laid out and it's set in front of you, I was like, okay, I know I need a vegetable. Let me go look what the vegetables are. Let me go pick a vegetable. In the marketing case, it's, all right, I know I need an audience, right? Let me get the audience. And so it is one of those things where the audience comes in. Now, when the audience comes in, there's a whole bunch of data that happens on the back end. Prior to the people even getting there, you know, you got to set the table, which is me doing data nets. If you hear anybody use data nets, they stole it from me. It's mine. I made it up. And I'm tired of people selling my stuff. So I set the data nets for the more technical people out there. I use Google Tag Manager and Google Analytics. So that's how I'm making sure that when people come in, I know more things about them than I probably should, right? And then how they interact with each element on the website, the page, everything else, and then how they get the checkout. And what I'm doing after typically 3 days, if not 3 days and 7 days of data. So what I do is I look at the whole picture. I change these two things, one or two things. I test it. Another 1-2 days go by. This worked. This didn't work. Take what worked. Get rid of what didn't work. Change something else. And so eventually you get to a point where when you're making your recipes, right? When you eventually get to the point where you have this perfect campaign. So you build it. You tweak it, you build it, you tweak it, you build it, you tweak it, and eventually you have hit a plateau point. But essentially, it's when no matter what you do, no matter how many changes you make, no matter how much money you put on it, it's not going to change. But that's where we get to as far as marketing. So as far as being innovative and creative and all this other stuff, the creativity and the innovation comes with those tweaks. Mm-hmm. But again, everybody else starts out the same. So if you go to your mom's house, your grandma's house or whatever, and like there's like a special recipe that your grandma won't tell anybody until she dies, right? My grandmother held on to this barbecue sauce recipe. And when she died, she didn't tell nobody. It's like, you were supposed to tell people how to make this. So for the past 10 plus years, me and my cousin have been going back and forth, like each making and tweaking the recipe and like, oh, taste this. Are we close? Are we any closer? We don't know what she put in this barbecue sauce, but we got really, really close, right? So it's the same thing with like marketing campaigns. You want to build it with the base. And I'm not going to tell you what the base of my grandma's barbecue sauce is, but you build it with the base. Might be ketchup, right? And then you just keep adding stuff and changing stuff until you get close to where you want to be, perfection, or in this case, whatever the marketing research team came with prior.
So gamification is gaining traction in marketing. Mm-hmm. Have you ever utilized that, like gamification elements and campaigns?
Mm-hmm. With the gamification, when you think about Temu, Wish.com, they're like big major e-commerce sites. Mm-hmm. There's always like, oh, you win this, you spin a wheel, you do this, whatever, right? And then even as far as just like your behaviors, just moving forward down the sales funnel, or even after you buy something, gamification has always played a small part in marketing, especially when people like me, the psychology degree people or the behavior analysis people, showed up on the game, on the marketing game, right?
Yeah.
So when you go to Smoothie King, right, back in 1994, because I'm not that old, but back in 1994, you go to Smoothie King or you get your nails done or whatever, you get a little punch card, right? That's a type of gamification, right? You get your punch. After 5 punches, you get a free smoothie or a free dinner or whatever, right? Very much the same deal. When you look at these e-commerce sites, people have a fear of missing out, and people are addicted to their own dopamine, right? So when you combine those two, you get what we now call gamification. Gamification marketing wise started again forever ago, just outside, but like online, the term and the way that we think about it, I believe it started with Farmville. Do you remember Farmville on Facebook?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So I believe that it started with Farmville and it got picked up. And now we're talking about real games, but you know, there's a whole ad machine behind that, right? So and I think the micro payments and charges got really big with Candy Crush.
Yeah.
And then from there, outside of actual games, these e-commerce sites started with the wheels when you're on mobile or whatever else, right? So gamification has always been around. It's just been subtle and no one's really put a name to it before.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as again, you got the outrage machines. We already talked about AI going on, and you have these echo chambers of "we know you like to hear this thing" has been going on. It's creating more and more dopamine effects, and to the point where TikTok's whole platform is gamified. The whole thing is gamified, right? You don't know it because it's not like in your face. Oh, if I do this thing, if I scroll down for 4 hours, I'll get that. No, but it's subtle. It's biological and it's psychological. So
with the as you mentioned TikTok, with the rise of kind of like micro moments, like instant decisions, how do you craft marketing strategies to capitalize? Like you probably know this at the top of your head or close to it. What is like the timeline from when a person sees an ad to like when they decide yes or no if I'm going to click it or not?
Back in the olden days, before everybody had 3 second attention spans, we used to have these.
But it took 3 seconds for the link to in dial up days. It took 3 seconds at least.
Yeah, for anything to load. Yes. And I was actually trying to explain that to my son, and he called me a liar. He's like, "Why did the internet make noise, and why did you turn it off? That doesn't make any sense." So he essentially called me a liar. This is like on Christmas, anyway. back in the olden days, it was called touch points. So a touch point, again, back way when, 2010, you had 7 touch points. So you got to be in front of a customer 7 to 10 times before they had any sort of interaction, engagement, whatever. So with TikTok and Facebook, with TikTok and Instagram marketing, you have to either blend in. So you use influence marketing. So someone pops up on their screen that they are used to seeing on their screen. And it's not like, you know, the guy in the suit and a tie and at Fidelity Bank, we do this. No, like that's not gonna work, right? Yeah. So it has to blend in. So that's influence marketing right there. And then there's another thing where it uses, it works on Instagram mostly in 2022, 2021, where when you were scrolling and you see like a red box or like something was circled in the background, but it was really nothing circled. But the thing is, your sad little monkey brain is going and you stop and you see something red and you're like, oh, what's that red thing? And then, so that'll be akin to a touch point. But now when people are, you know, TikTok shop, right? You're scrolling through TikTok shop, you see the, well, for me, it's always some sort of a girdle or perfume or something. I don't know if you have girdles and perfumes on your TikTok
shop. No, I do not.
But pretty much, you know, people are just spamming that to me. So after, I think it's every 5 videos, you see an ad now. So essentially when I'm spending 30 minutes on TikTok by accident, because all I wanted to do was send somebody a message, and it's really all their fault. that is now 3 hours later. It is 1 o'clock in the morning. I just want to go to sleep. I've seen a total of 40, 50, 60 ads, and it's typically the same type of ad. So I'm more inclined to buy it, you know, time at the 20th point, because I've seen it so many times. And I don't live in a life with ads. That sounds outrageous because I make ads and I've been in the ad space. But you'll quickly find out that most people who do marketing or whatever, like, our bane of existence is ads. Like Hulu, I got Hulu Plus or whatever it's called.
The works.
YouTube, I got Google Premium. I don't do ads. Like, you, there's no way to get an ad in front of me unless I'm on TikTok.
You're leading me to my next question. You're teeing me up. You mentioned you have a son. And yes. Just as you would say, dentists make sure their kids brush their teeth. You've got police officers telling their kids that they're not allowed to search you or they need a warrant. As a marketing person, what is something that you instill on your son because you know the back end?
So for my son, who doesn't listen to me at all, just
like the internet access. Out there.
Like, I could call him right now. He wouldn't come. He doesn't listen to me at all. But in my house, he doesn't watch YouTube. So he cannot, let me make that truthful. He doesn't watch YouTube by himself. And especially on any phone device, whatever. Because as soon as you open YouTube, it's shorts, right? And so even on YouTube Kids now, they have like the little short videos where like the autoplay. So we don't do anything with autoplay, except for Netflix, because I can't stop that. We don't do anything with a short form content. And if I do call him and he does listen to me and he comes here, which won't happen, he would tell you that little short videos makes your brain dumb. He's 7, go with it. Okay. So I had to explain to him, like, look, if you're constantly watching these short videos, what's gonna happen is you're not gonna have a good time. And we actually did a whole experiment where one weekend he got to do whatever he wanted to do. This was last May, right? Mm-hmm. So last May, before we went on our Disney cruise, great time. Don't go to parks anymore. I said it. I don't care if Disney sues me. He got to watch for the whole 2 days, 3 days straight. Nothing but YouTube shorts, this, that, the other. He's having a good time. And I'm like, okay, so you know the math work you did right before school let out? I need you to do it right here, right now. He couldn't do it. And so it's just showing him the impact of what it does to your brain. Like, you can't focus. You can't do 50 questions. One, because you're 7. And two, because your brain has been rotting and festering watching this crazy stuff. And granted, there was boundaries on, like, he couldn't go on like the dark side of YouTube, but it was like still kid stuff. Yeah. But you know, he got the message to the point where when he sees other children watching YouTube, he's like, that's a bad platform. You shouldn't do that. You're not going to be very successful in life. And then he tells them about his portfolio and his day trading plans.
Huh. Oh, that's great.
My son's a mess.
Oh, no, he sounds fine. I mean, he's a kid. We all have kids who they're going to turn out not as bad as we always think we are, because we always worry.
Yeah. I don't know about this one, though, but we'll see. I'll keep you posted.
So what I asked for my final question, mm-hmm. what is something that your parents did that you'd like to pass on to your kids? Mm-hmm. And what is something that you would do either differently or new?
Okay. So for those of you who don't know, I grew up, I was in home foster. So that means I was in the foster care system, but I was raised by my family, essentially. So my grandmother raised me, right? And so my grandmother, again, she was born in 1940, totally different life. Her whole thing is, we're going to make it through, tenacity, courage. And just having that drive to, we're going to get this done no matter what. And for some of your audience, you might relate with this, but you got to work twice as hard to have half as much, was kind of ingrained into me until fairly recently. It took a lot of therapy, but I got it out of me. That kind of got me pretty far in life. My therapist wouldn't say to glorify that, but I will for this conversation. And then as far as the things that I wouldn't do moving forward is, and this was not to her detriment or anything else. She, again, born in 1940, it was illegal for her to go to school, right? So she didn't have the same access to opportunities as I did, right? So there were so many limiting beliefs of what you could do, what you had to be, and even keeping it super surface, right? Like when you get a job, you need to be there for 20, 30, 40 years, right? Or you can't change career paths, or you got to know what you're going to do when you're 15 years old. Well, what I do now didn't exist when I was 15, right?
Yeah.
And so with that, I got a lot of flack. When I was in high school, I was always a straight A student, even though I was dyslexic and had other issues and everything else. But I was always a straight A student. I always had like multiple jobs and everything else, right? So the whole idea that I had to, in a couple years, pick one thing that I was going to do for the rest of my life was terribly daunting. And, you know, I tried to pretend and I tried to be that one thing and pick this one thing to do and follow this path. And needless to say, that didn't work, but it worked out in my favor. And so when it comes to my son, who wants to be a day trader, animator, and architect, right? He can do and be all those things. He actually has a day trading account right now. And for federal reasons, I'll say that it's a demo account, but he does really well, right? So he's a day trader already. He's not an animator because he doesn't want to go to drawing classes, but he can literally do whatever he wants to do. He can be whatever he wants to be. And I see my job as a parent is to just give him as many keys as possible. And then he gets to decide what door he wants to unlock and then what door he wants to go through. Like and that. I'm not putting him in a box, you know?
Yeah, I like that. Especially the metaphor.
Yeah.
Man, I love metaphors. They make simple folk like me understand just elaborate concepts very easily because I'm more of a images person.
I try to speak to multiple people, you know, I try to make sure.
No, that's great. And is there anything, well, I guess you kind of touched on both sides of it. No, that's perfect.
Yeah, I wanted to, you know, have that tenacity, make sure that he knows that if you get knocked down, get back up, but you don't got to be one thing.
So. That's great. Thank you. Thanks very much for being on the show. I appreciated you
coming on. Thank you for having me. This was great. And I got a whole bunch more conspiracy theories.
I would even imagine. I thought of a bunch of them while we were talking. Like another one I had heard was like that submarine, that scrunched submarine. Like I heard a conspiracy theory that it had actually been found like 4 days before, like they actually announced it on the news. And that they were trying to cover up something like else. And they held back all the, you know, the SEO and people telling on the news just to kind of like pump up for 4 days to kind of sway. But that's conspiracy theory, obviously.
I mean, when you think about how the internet works and that like not every country has the same internet.
Yeah.
Not every... So it's kind of like nine, right? Nine. If I say nine to you, you think that means number nine, right? But if I say nine in Germany, they're like, why are you just saying no for no reason, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like the SEO works off of tags and crawling stuff and everything else. So when it's in a different language, which is why ChatGPT is having so many issues in other languages, you get really interesting results. And so when you go to Google on a VPN, just surface Google on a VPN and you use Google Translate, you'll find very interesting things about things that are happening around the block for you that you did not know. So you get to see what people see that we don't get to see. And I got an opportunity when I was 18 years old to travel outside of the country for the first time. And I went to Switzerland. And at the time, like laptops and computers were like, everyone had them, but not overseas. So we were in the hotel and it just kind of opened up automatically to CNN.com. And it's like, why does this CNN look different than the CNN that's on my laptop? But it was the same stories. It was just so different.
Yeah.
And the ones in Switzerland were very, there was so much longer as well. It had more details and it was very neutral. But the CNN I was looking at, I was like, oh, we need to go get the pitchforks and get this guy. But the CNN and Switzerland was very calm, cool, collected, very unbiased. So it taught me a lot in that one moment. And SEO's no different. Yeah. You know, they said, well, we don't control SEO. You do. And I know you do, because I know people who work there. But different story for a different day.
Well, thanks again for kind of expanding my knowledge on digital marketing. That kind of opened up conspiracy theories that might not be conspiracy theories. Yeah.
Got them for days. And I also do government contracting. I got them for days. But yeah, so if you or your audience, or whatever, you guys have any questions, or you're starting to start a business or what have you, or, you know, whatever, you have any marketing business questions, I'm always on LinkedIn. I don't post on LinkedIn, which someone called me out for the other day. So I got to build a chat bot to post for me on LinkedIn. But yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, Michelle A. Bassett. It's a little purple unicorn thing there. Just message me, add me. I'm pretty okay. Responsive.
And I'll add a link to your LinkedIn when I post this on on Instagram.
All right.
And I'll make sure the SEO is perfect, so I'll hit all the tags.
All right, thank you.
Well, have a good night.
All right, you too.
Okay, bye.
If you like this week's episode of People More Interesting Than Me, please follow me on Apple Podcasts so you won't miss out on more episodes like these.